Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. They're singing Handel's Hallelujah Chorus in Georgia. That's Karen Handel, who came out on top in that special election by a comfortable margin. In South Carolina, it was closer than people thought it would be, but once again, a Republican prevailed. That makes it 4-0 for the Republicans in special elections since President Trump took office. We'll start today talking politics with Washington Post syndicated columnist E.J. Dion. Then a conversation about the reliability of biomedical research. NPR science correspondent Richard Harris joins me to talk about his fascinating and frankly kind of scary new book, Rigor Mortis: How Sloppy Science Creates Worthless Cures, Crushes Hope, and Wastes Billions. E.J. Dion and Richard Harris join me for Midday right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday and happy solstice. Today is the longest day of the year. Sunrise was at 5:40 this morning. Sunset isn't until 8:37 tonight. Well, last night was a long night for Democrats, who lost two more special elections to fill vacancies created by congressional Republicans who now work in the Trump administration. In Georgia's 6th congressional district, Republican Karen Handel beat newcomer Democrat John Ossoff by 4 points. It's a comfortable margin in what most considered to be a close race. And in South Carolina, Republican Ralph Norman defeated Democrat Archie Parnell by about the same margin, which was considered much closer in that race than most people had expected. So coming up in just a bit, a conversation with NPR science correspondent Richard Harris about his new book on the state of medical research. But first, a conversation about the state of the body politic with E.J. Dion, a syndicated columnist for The Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's also a university professor at Georgetown University and the author of several books, including Why the Right Went Wrong, Conservatism from Goldwater to Trump and Beyond. And I'm happy to say he is a somewhat frequent guest here on Midday. It's good to talk to you, E.J. Thanks for your time.
I'm a happy frequent guest. Love your show. It's good to be with you. Thanks.
So Mr. Ossoff spent $31 million. He ran as a centrist. He's a pretty young, charismatic guy. He was running against what a lot of people thought was a less than ideal candidate in Karen Handel, who spent $23 million, about $8 million less than Mr. Ossoff. And it still wasn't enough to win. If that's not enough to win, what do you think it is going to be? What is going to be enough to win for Democrats in 2018?
Well, the first thing is Democrats have to run in districts that they have a good chance of winning in. And there is no doubt that Democrats are disappointed by this because they really thought they could win this seat. But the fact of the matter is that the four races that Democrats have lost this year were all in very Republican districts. This was a district that Mitt Romney had carried by, I believe it's 24 points. So this was not exactly hospitable territory for the Democrats. Nonetheless, they are disappointed. And I think what's interesting here is that it takes South Carolina versus Georgia. In South Carolina, there was very little focus on that race. There wasn't national money from both sides. And the Democrat there came within 3 points. It was closer than the Ossoff race, 2,800 votes it was. And I think what that race shows is something that should worry Republicans in less hospitable districts in the future, which is that the Democratic base is very mobilized in a way that the Republicans were in 2010 and 2018. A lot of people are going to go back and look at the Ossoff race and say what he did wrong. I've just been working today on a column, and I've talked to a lot of people, to people in both parties. And I think that Ossoff could not run what one of my folks I talked to called a screechingly anti-Trump campaign, because Trump was, while unpopular in the district, a little more popular than he is in a lot of other districts or nationally. But he probably could have run much harder against the Republican health care bill, which he chose not to do. So I think what you're going to have with this race is everybody is going to draw whatever conclusions they wanted to draw before a single vote was cast. Democrats need a bigger economic message. Well, they actually do need a bigger economic message, but I'm not sure that would have elected Ossoff. And so it's disappointment for them. There's no miracle out of the suburbs of Georgia, but I think the fight against Trump is just going to continue.
You know, what about the folks who just talk about what could be described as political naivete? Karen Handel beat up John Ossoff on the fact that he didn't live in the district because he's living in Decatur, which is where Emory University is, where his fiance is attending medical school. He said he was going to move back to the district where he grew up. You know, ironically, Karen Handel grew up in the Maryland suburbs, you know, near Washington. but you know, those kinds of things. I mean, was it error-free ball that he played during this?
I don't understand why he didn't move into the district a long time ago. But I think what was fascinating about that is that Republicans used the fact that he lived 2 miles out of the district as an argument for the fact that his heart was 3,000 miles away in San Francisco. They really tried to make him a cultural outsider in that district. One of her ads was, "He's not one of us." That was one of her taglines. And they tied him, the Republicans did, to Nancy Pelosi. And he himself may have inadvertently contributed to this. He talked about, which is a nice thing to talk about in a campaign, turning Atlanta into the Silicon Valley of the South. That is, most of us would like to have our places where we live be as rich as the Silicon Valley, but it actually may have played back into this cultural argument they were making against him. So, yes, I think he should have moved into the district, but the Republicans did more with that than just the 2 miles outside the district. And I think that what it shows is there's still a lot of tribal partisanship out there, and some of it has survived Trump, even among Republicans who didn't necessarily like Trump. I think that's the other important thing we have to look at here, which is she did not embrace Trump. She distanced herself from Trump in this race. So while it is a real victory for Republicans, without any doubt, it's not as big a victory for Donald Trump as he will no doubt make it over the next days.
So she distanced herself from Trump to a certain extent, and Ossoff decided not to go after Trump. But certainly Karen Handel did everything she could to link Pelosi, to link Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi to John Ossoff. That's an old tactic. They were doing that back in 2016, 2014. It seems to be a tactic that continues to succeed. Are other Democrats going to have trouble with that?
Yeah, well, I think that it is something they're going to do, and you're already seeing this morning a debate in the party, which kind of breaks down into two camps. Camp one is Pelosi is a drag on our ticket. I noticed that Congressman Tim Ryan, who tried to displace Pelosi as leader of the Democrats, made that argument last night or this morning. And on the other side are people who say Republicans are going to try to turn every Democrat into an out-of-touch liberal, and if they don't have Pelosi, they'll use someone else or some other symbol. But I think that's a live debate in the party. I think that there are a lot of Democrats who feel, from what I can gather, that Pelosi is a really good leader of the Democrats in Congress and a really easy symbol for Republicans to use against Democrats. And that's sort of the trade-off they made when they reelected her as leader.
With both of these races in Georgia and South Carolina, what's your take on the impact of the legislative agenda that the Republicans have, one of which, of course, is this very secretive process surrounding health care, although we may find some details out about that as early as tomorrow, as well as the Democrats' apparent decision to sort of slow walk things in the Congress to try to gum up the works to the extent that they can. How do these two races, a lot of people are saying that these two races will have an impact on that agenda. What do you think?
Oh, I think there's no doubt. And by the way, I just want to be clear. I'm not sort of in any way playing down the disappointment Democrats feel. And you can only, you know that by imagining what they would be saying this morning if Ossoff had won. So that's just a reality. But I think the paradox is that if this encourages Republicans to pass a health care bill that looks at all like the one passed in the House, I think they will actually be doing themselves long-term damage. These bills are very, very unpopular. In general, voters don't really trust what Washington does with health care. It's one of the reasons why Obamacare, when it passed, was unpopular. But now that people look at what these bills would do to Obamacare, they like that even less than they liked the Affordable Care Act. So I think it may well encourage Republicans to move forward with this and personally, I think that's going to be something they'll regret a year from now.
In your book about the history of conservatism, you talked about all the way from Goldwater through Trump, that Republicans time and again disappointed their supporters by promising things they couldn't deliver. Mr. Trump seems to be a terrific advocate of that strategy because he makes all sorts of wild promises. Here we have a Republican district in the 6th in Georgia that is highly educated, that's affluent. It seems that an intellectual argument about Mr. Trump's unfitness for office that Democrats try to make might be persuasive, or that his policies would be destructive to their comfortable lifestyles. But that didn't seem to resonate this time around. What is the argument against Trump to a Republican who supported Mr. Trump in the last election?
Well, there are two things. One is most Republicans are going to stick with Trump till the bitter end. We forget that on the day he resigned, Richard Nixon had a 23% approval rating, which meant he still, that most of those people were Republicans, which meant that a whole lot of Republicans stuck with him till the end. I was struck that on the morning of the Georgia race, the New York Times, CBS rather, had a poll which showed that Trump's approval rating had, among Republicans, had dropped, I believe the numbers are, from 83% at the 100-day mark to 71 or 72% now. That's a big drop within your own party, and that's a number that would worry me a lot if I were, in the Trump inner circle, which I most certainly am not. Because the Republicans in Congress will probably stick with him unless either there is some outlandish revelation or until Republicans in their electorates start going south on him. Dropping that much that fast is a real sign to Trump. It didn't keep Republicans from voting for Karen Handel, but I think that's a long-term issue they're going to have to deal with.
Well, E.J. Dionne, it's always fun to talk to you. I appreciate the time, and you got a new book coming out in September, and I look forward to talking to you about that.
I am looking forward to that so much. Thanks for calling, and
good
to be with you.
We'll talk to you soon. Okay. E.J. Dionne, he's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, a longtime syndicated columnist for The Washington Post, and the author of many books, included his newest, which will be published in September. It's called One Nation After Trump, A Guide for the Perplexed, the Disillusioned, the Desperate, and the Not Yet Deported. He has co-authored that book with Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein. Coming up after a break, Richard Harris from NPR joins me to talk about his latest book. He has some very disquieting things to say about the state of medical research. Oh joy, oh rapture, right? I'm Tom Hall. Stick with us. You're listening to Midday.